Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 55 on Tuesday, the 26th of July, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. You sounded a bit surprised at 55.
Yeah, I don't know why, actually. I'm sorry you picked up on that. I sort of thought, oh, I've got away with my hesitation there.
No, I'm here to point out all faults and foibles. You know that.
So
I mean, we've done, you know, this will be the 55th show.
Yeah, I know. Yes, almost. No. Awesome stuff.
Right, we got a lot of stuff tonight, haven't we?
We do. Let's get on with it. And people complain if we mutter too much at the beginning as well. So, yeah, I had a lovely weekend that would have been better if it had been a bit longer. And this isn't just me waffling, because on Sunday morning I went to Great Escapes. Classic car hire that I've been to before, and it was the second of their classics and coffee, which was absolutely fantastic. It was another lovely sunny morning, interesting cars, the usual eclectic selection. A whole bunch of those are going out via Instagram. There is a YouTube video if you're too lazy to click through photo albums. And I shall put up the album on the site. I'll probably just start uploading some pictures after this. So it probably won't be a great, wordy, long blog post, but there will be access to all the pictures and the YouTube video through that. And I'm sure Andrew will put a link in the show notes anyway.
I will.
So that's what I was up to on Sunday morning.
Excellent. Last week, we didn't mention it in last week's show because we weren't sure when the review of the CRV we had for a week was going to go up, but it actually went up minutes before the last show because everything seemed to click at this end for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, I will have a link in the show notes, but basically, shocker, I like some technology.
I know, it was pretty, I was pretty, I knew that, having been in the CRV with you, but all the same, it still came as a bit of a shock when I actually heard you saying it, you know, like on air type of thing. So, so yeah, and if you are interested in a review of the various polybag hooks that you can find in the boot of a CRV, then by all means have a listen.
Oh, come on, I do admit to my slight fascination with the more obscure details of a car.
Carry the boot fetish, and I don't mean leather ones.
No,
yeah, you really need to get. You really need to speak nicely to Lauren at BMW and try and get you a Mini Countryman, I think, because having had that sort of small peer at that way back, probably need a good poke at the various storage options that are available for that.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Right, next follow up.
Yeah. So last week we talked about FCA. And goodness, you say, yes, you talked about FCA once again. And we were talking about the sales reporting processes and how they were in a little bit of trouble over the sales reporting processes.
Yeah.
Well, they have put out a very wordy and very long press release, which runs through and explains just what was happening. And the thing is that basically their dealers have been filling in roughly the same form for about 30 odd years. And it allowed that little bit of leeway in there. And there were issues with that. And there had been, it seems, for really quite a long time, looking at the monthly cycles. Now, that stopped in 2013.
September 2013.
Yes, I was going to say, oh, thank you for remembering which month it was. September 2013. And basically, that stuff used to happen. The controls around it weren't as rigorous as they would have liked and as they possibly should have been for the last 30 years. And they believe that has now stopped, and those practices have now been stopped since the end of 2013. And there is a great long press release that I'm sure we will link to, and that you can enjoy over a cup of coffee or three, to talk about the monthly adjustment figures and all these kind of things.
Yes, I think it's a moment of FCA trying to
they're trying
open
to do it right.
And honest with the investigation on stroke about to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think they're trying to get their shots in first.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how the various authorities view that and what they're going to do, because you know, that's 2013 to, you know, even this month they were saying they were continuing the streak. So
yeah,
we shall continue to watch this space and report back if there's anything vaguely interesting.
It was all about the fact that people could say something was sold in 1 month, and then the next month's form they could unwind the sale, is the wording that's used here. So yeah. Yep. Let's move on and let people investigate that one, should they desire.
Yes. Now moving on to our other great companion to the show, Dieselgate. And today, just before we came on to record this episode, the what do we call it? It's the
Department of Justice.
Yeah, I was trying to think of it's the class action. No, it's not the class action. It's the
it's the Dieselgate settlement.
Yes, thank you.
Offered by Volkswagen, which is worth about $15 billion.
Yes, and this was the preliminary. This was the judge presiding over what the two sides have agreed. Mm-hmm. To see whether it was agreed, whether he agrees with what's been agreed by them agreeing. Dear, I'm doing well tonight. So I'm just going to pick.
I'm so glad it's you that's got yourself in a complete tongue twister instead of me for a change.
Well, I was struggling to just work out what you know legal was and things like that. So, so I'll start with just a few key points that have been spotted on Twitter that have been mentioned. But what's been agreed between VW and over the buyback is that if a car is worth $9,500, the person who owns it will get $9,500 plus 20% of that, which is $1,920, plus $2,986.73, which is a fixed payment, for a total of $14,500. Which is quite a bill. People accept it. So,
but what if people don't accept that and they say, well, actually, I want to keep my car because I have sentimental reasons, whatever else, and I just want you to fix it to make it compliant. What happens then?
Well, if they do that, then they're allowed to drive the car for 2 years, and then if they decide at the end of those 2 years they don't like it, the buyback's offer is still on.
So they could essentially say, well, I don't really know yet. I want to keep hold of mine for the time being. But any time within the next 2 years, they can say, actually, you know what? It's now time for me to buy a new car. I'm not getting offered the right amount of money for this. So can you buy it off me, Volkswagen?
Yeah.
Okay. And does that? I assume that only applies to the person who owns it right at the moment. We probably don't know that yet, do we? We
don't know that yet. That's going to transfer.
Mm-hmm. That'll be an interesting one. Is if it transfers, I would imagine it won't.
Mm.
Because if you're already buying a car that you know has been fixed, then you already know there is no duplicity in any way there, I imagine.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Just to round this up, the judge has said that he grants preliminary approval and is filing the order today for preliminary approval. However, the final approval hearing will be on the 18th of October, when they'll get the chance to just say, yeah, it's all sorted or not.
And it looks like that'll go through on the Nordish.
Yeah, it looks like they're pretty much there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which will be a nice line underneath for VW to try and move on from.
Well, it ends the uncertainty period, as well. So everybody knows what the rules are from then on, and that means that Volkswagen can plan, and everybody just should be able to understand what's happening and get on with it. Really.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the Tesla section?
Yeah, let's move on to the Tesla section now. And again, we'll try and nail this one relatively quickly. Earlier in the week, Elon Musk revealed. Gee whiz, we're both tongue-tied tonight. Revealed what is headed in the blog post on Tesla.com as Master Plan Part 2, because obviously he's a fan of... I've forgotten the name of the film now. It's the... Yes, never mind.
Charlie Sheen.
Hot Shots Part 2. Thank you, that's the one. So he's saying that basically he's almost finished the master plan that he wrote 10 years ago and that has been on the Tesla website ever since, and that's had four different parts to it. The first was to create a low volume car which would be expensive, and that was Tesla Roadster, of course. The second one was to use the money earned from that to develop a medium volume car at a slightly lower price, and of course that was the Tesla Model S. And the third part was to use the money generated by the Model S to create an affordable high-volume car, which is going to be the Model 3. And the last part of that is to provide solar power. And he does point out that that's not a joke, and it has been on there. He claims it has been on the Tesla website for the past 10 years. And I'm sure that someone will have gone back through... internetarchive.org for the Tesla website 10 years ago and we'll have verified that. And if it wasn't there, then we'd all know about it by now. Mm. And that's the providing solar power. So by buying up and integrating solar power company, then that he claims that basically they're well on the way to achieving those four objectives. And so they want to move on to the next batch of objectives. So what I hear you cry are those next objectives. Now, there's an interesting thing before I get to them. And that is the fact that Tesla has actually changed its name. So Tesla has actually dropped the Motors from its name just a couple of weeks ago. And that's the first clue that this might not all be car-related. So.
Sort of jumping the gun a little.
What, by changing the name? Apple did the same. They changed from Apple Computers Incorporated.
Yeah, but if... if we go with the first step of the new master plan, mm-hmm. or the part two...
Master plan!
Yes, quite.
Sorry.
You need lots of reverb for that.
Has to be done.
is that they're looking to integrate SolarCity mm-hmm. into Tesla. And it's all about energy generation and storage.
Yes.
Now, for someone who's abdicated himself from being on the boards or being in the committees that make any decision on whether to accept the offer and to accept buying it.
Yeah.
This is quite a public statement of saying, do it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes, it is. Yes.
We know he's for it because he's made the bid, hasn't he? He's made the offer.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of implies that he expects it to go through.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, then he's certainly going to make that one much, much harder for him.
Yeah.
So the next one up is
Going back about that, though. That, as he says, solar power has been on their website for literally 10 years. So it's either has been on for 10 years or nearly 10 years, not literally, but never mind.
Literally nearly almost 10 years.
Yes. So that's not really a new thing. Mm-hmm. Tesla Solar. Integrating Solar City is a new thing, but you know, that's just the execution of it.
Yes. Yes, well, in his summary at the end, he does describe it as creating stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage. So he's going straight from objective to implementation of the system. Meep, meep, meep. Nerd alert. So he's going straight from... he's going from the strategic goal and looking at and going straight to the tactic as to how they're going to achieve that.
Yeah.
If you're going through and looking at strategy theory.
So what's his second part then?
Next one up is he intends to expand to cover the major forms of terrestrial transport. So he's saying right at the minute, Tesla addresses two relatively small segments of the premium sedans and SUVs, quote unquote. With the Model 3, he's looking to get into the into a wider market globally. But he's also looking to create a future compact SUV and a pickup truck. And then going on from there, he's looking to move into heavy-duty trucks and high passenger density urban transport, which is an interesting one there. So what he means by that, high passenger density urban transport, is he's saying that it's a curious one. I'm going to read it out in the words that are published on the Tesla website, okay? So it's, with the advent of autonomy, it will probably make sense to shrink the size of buses and transition the role of bus driver to that of fleet manager. Traffic congestion would improve due to increased passenger aerial density by eliminating the center aisle and putting seats where there are currently entryways, and matching acceleration and braking to other vehicles, thus avoiding the inertial impedance to smooth traffic flow of traditional heavy buses. Would also take people all the way to their destination. Fixed summon buttons at existing bus stops would serve those who don't have a phone. Design accommodates wheelchair, strollers, and bikes.
That sounds like a taxi.
It does sound a lot like a taxi to me.
And how are you doing that if it's high density?
Well, that's it. I mean, I originally read this and thought, well, it's little pods, isn't it?
And then it goes on and says
eliminating the center aisle and putting seats where there are currently entryways. So how do you get in and out? Or is there a door in the front or something?
There's masses numbers of...
so there's
all,
know, all
the
of...
side opens, basically, is what it, that, yeah. How I read that.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, well,
whether
that's not the way that I thought of it.
Individual doors or...
It's a good way to get away. It's like the old slam door trains.
Oh, do they just lift the whole side up over the top of the...
Oh, don't. Right. So anyway, we're trying to solutionise this.
They get boomed on. They get boomed on like in Star Trek. That's it. Solved.
So, I mean, the heavy trucks one is interesting because there is one of the, is it a startup in the Netherlands, is already looking to produce electric tractor units. So lorry, cab, tractor unit things. For sales to supermarkets with a limited range, of course, because they'll run from a distribution hub. So they'll go out, make a delivery, come back again, just the same way as they do with some of the lighter fleet units that they already use here in the UK. And it looks like Tesla are going to aim to do that kind of thing, but I'm sure it will be over a much longer range because it will probably be going to a slightly different to that US market.
Some people said they were a bit surprised at moving into lorries and urban vehicles and all the rest of it, but I'm not at all, because what Tesla is it's the drivetrain, and they're sticking a different body on the drivetrain. Here what he's saying is our technology will advance far enough that we can do this with bigger vehicles.
Yeah.
And we will have what he's trying to say is we will have a better grip of manufacturing processes and the different materials and the way they work and all the rest of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we can take that knowledge and stick it onto a bus, onto a minibus, onto pickup trucks, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So, but it's a logical step. I mean,
the bus one
$35,000 is the bottom of the range I think they can afford to go at. And I think they're making a loss, aren't they, on those cars?
Possibly, yeah.
So,
but remember, those ones don't include a lot of what the more expensive ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like lifetime charging, for example.
Yes, exactly. So they've got to broaden the sectors they can go into. Otherwise, the business doesn't work because they can only make so many,
mm-hmm.
And only so many people can afford them.
With the trucks and stuff, there's a couple of really important things that they will need to realize. And the first is, of course, there's a fleet management aspect of it. So people are coming along and buying a whole load of trucks. But the thing is that you've got to be able to provide the backup service to that.
Yeah.
There are a few things more frustrating than your relatively new tractor unit sitting in a service bay or at a truck garage for some time because parts can't be sourced. Because you've just spent a lot of money on that.
Mm.
So my father's company goes out and buys a tractor unit, and there is an issue with it. Something happens. It's very, very frustrating, even for the driver, just to be using a loaner unit or something, or to have to rearrange all the loads so we can get away with fewer tractor units.
Mm.
And that's a problem that stops us buying established brands. So as a new brand into the whole area, then Tesla are going to really have to be good at that stuff. That supply chain to the dealer or to wherever it's getting fixed is going to have to be there. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, because, timescales involved as well. I mean, he's, from what he's hinting at, it is putting more and more pressure on getting so many more vehicles out of their factories. Yeah. It will be the Gigafactory, though, so getting out of their factory, I mean, they're already behind.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
So what's the next section that he moves on to?
Oh, I just wanted to, before we finish sorry, it's my turn. It was your turn to do it that time.
Yes.
There was a counter argument about, actually, if you've got more smaller vehicles, it takes up more space than for your big vehicles on the road. Really, really interesting blog by public transport consultant Jarrett Walker, all about, does Elon Musk understand urban geometry? Go have a read of it. It's interesting, not just because it's to do with Tesla and to do with cars. If you are interested in that whole integration aspect into the sort of into cityscapes and all that kind of things, it's worth a read. It's not very long. It's written by a human for humans. Definitely worth a read.
Yeah, it is a good one. That'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. So the next one is something that he's already working on and that we know about is autonomy. So he's saying that as the technology matures, all Tesla vehicles will have the hardware necessary to be fully self-driving with fail operational capability, meaning that any given system the car could break and your car would still drive itself safely. It's important to emphasize the refinement and validation of software will take much longer than putting in place camera, radar, sonar, and computing hardware, which is interesting given that he's just changing the supplier for some of this. Was announced today, and I can't remember the name of the supplier they're moving from, but they're trying to integrate more of that.
Wasn't it the chip people?
I think so, yeah.
And they were leaving.
Mm. So they're trying to integrate. They're claiming that they're going to integrate that much more into Tesla there. So they reckon, and part of the thing that they're hoping to rely on this is, of course, fleet learning, which is another reason why the trucks make sense, to be honest. But they're currently expecting that regulatory approval will require something in the order of 6 billion miles or 10 billion kilometers. And currently the learning amount is 3 million miles a day. So it's still going to take a little bit of a while before that regulatory approval comes through.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I don't want to go into the figures of miles and how safe it is, because he goes on to talk about safety in that section, because there are what appears to be quite compelling arguments counter to the figures that have been released up to now about autonomy, because what has been brought in to me when talking about autopilot specifically, other things have been added on to that. When it talks about number of miles safely travelled, that they've suddenly been explicitly clear that they are including the steering and is it the auto braking, I think, as well. But that's included as well as autopilot. So
there's such a calm
reaction from both sides when it gets to the more fundamental ends of the spectrum. Again, I'm saying on both sides because it is quite tedious at times, but you just, if we could talk about it maturely and discuss these figures and then agree where we are, That would be, that's what's going to be helpful to us all. And I know that the Tesla side are trying to say, no, no, this is the facts. But the other side is trying to say, no, but this is the facts. But it's got into a shouting match now.
It's, yes, there's because, a lot no, of passion.
I want to be heard more, so I'll shout louder. And this is for your safety. And that's, you know, they're both coming at it from what they feel are the correct angles. And that's the problem. It's beliefs now.
Yes, it is.
We're
far
getting
more
onto
beliefs
emotion
facts.
And beliefs rather than facts, which muddies the water and makes arguments and discussion very difficult.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. No, you're quite right. It is. It is definitely turned into a religious war. One level or another. So the last one, anyway, is sharing. So once self-driving comes along, because you'll be able to summon your Tesla from wherever you want, then it could be that you could let other people summon your Tesla from anywhere they want. And so you could actually let other people be self-driven in your car. And as a result, the revenue generated by that could be used to offset your monthly loan or lease cost. I think this is a horrible, horrible idea, which I would never let happen because it's a bit like renting out your private space.
Yeah, there's two things that come to me when I hear that. First one is not on your Nelly.
Yeah.
Because the public are filthy, horrible creatures that have no respect for other people's property.
This is true.
The second point is you're actively looking at a way I can earn some money to offset the costs. So we ain't getting no cheap Teslas anytime soon.
No, and they're also saying where demand exceeds supply of customer-owned cars, Tesla will operate its own fleet. So you should always be able to hail a ride from them.
Yeah, so Uber's furiously working with someone else then.
Toyota, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So there is a quick summary at the end. Quick summary at the end is that they wish to create stunning solar roofs with seamlessly integrated battery storage, expand the electric vehicle product line to address all major segments, develop a self-driving capability that is 10 times safer than manual via massive fleet learning, and lastly, enable your car to make money for you when you aren't using it. Those are the four bullet points from the final slide, really.
Yeah.
So there we go. I think it's ambitious. I don't think it's impossible. I don't necessarily like all of it, but hey, that's different. I think I like that they've shared it. Yeah, I think I do. So, yeah, anyway.
There's also a Bloomberg article that discusses quite measured, actually. It's quite decent, and it goes into each of the points that are raised in that post, which we will have in the show notes. But again, as it's Bloomberg, this is our warning: auto video.
Yeah, sorry, so, that's why I didn't go through it because I had it on my screen, and every 5 minutes the woman would start shouting. So apologies, I stopped it and cleared it. I might have used some language to get rid of the annoying lady. But yeah, it's a good article, so it's worth reading. Make sure you mute stuff though.
Yeah, just to get a different perspective on it, or to explain, help you understand what he's actually saying. So,
aye,
right. I think that's the Tesla section over.
There's not actually a lot of doom and gloom this week, guys. We're not bad on doom and gloom.
No, it's just
for a change. There's lots of varied stuff this week, which is nice.
Yeah.
Trust us, for us it's nice. Never mind you guys.
Yes. Right, I will take the next one. You will have seen the pictures of the Koenigsegg Agera 1 I was nearly going to get that wrong. Oh, dear. the name nerds would have come down on me. And it's got binned at the Nürburgring. Now, there was lots of comments I saw on Twitter. We were along the lines of, ha, 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 someone's getting fired. Which is all very...
It's all very grown up.
Yes. It was all very measured, and it was all sympathetic.
So what you're saying was just the way Twitter responds to everything, yeah?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, cool.
So what happened is Koenigsegg then took what was left of the car back to the factory and they've done some investigations and they've worked out what went wrong. And in an amazing moment, a car manufacturer has been open, honest, transparent, all the words that we talk about that you can see other manufacturers occasionally dipping their toe in the waters of.
Mm-hmm.
But Nuremberg just... Koenigsegg just did it.
Yeah.
And they came out and they explained that something went wrong with the ABS. And as a result, that's why it went off. Because it was the first time... This particular corner was apparently the first corner where ABS was needed to be pressed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they go, you're going so fast coming up to it. They
170 kilometers an hour.
That's quite quick.
That is quite quick.
That's a bit nippy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can see why you might want good brakes at that point.
Yeah, doing about tons. So yeah.
But they took it. But when they thought this was the problem, they've replicated it. They've tested it, and it is in fact what happened, because exactly what happened on the Nürburgring happened in simulation. So they are confident. They know the problem. Brilliant. They can fix it and move on. And they've got pictures of them working on the car on the shell, which is all lots of.
Which is remarkably solid, given it hit the fence. At approximately 110 kilometres an hour. So that's 65?
Something like that. So yeah.
68, I think.
Yeah. So it looks like it won't be long before it's back on the road, really.
No. It's quite interesting. They did actually say there is a release on the Koenigsegg website. The BritishTheGantry.com story is the one that we've been using as a basis mostly. And they're saying the 1-1 experienced front axle brake lockup at approximately 170 kilometres an hour. That must have been terrifying. On a section of the track known as the Fussrohr, before hitting the fence at Adenauer Forst at approximately 110 kilometres an hour, the impact of the fence launched the car into the air for an estimated 22 metres, while it turned 180 degrees before landing on its left rear wheel and pivoted to land parallel to the fence. The airbags, fuel shutoff, and other safety systems all deployed as they were designed to do. Now, they're saying that this car is repairable. So let's go through that again. Front axle brakes locked up at 170 kilometres an hour. It hit the fence at 110 kilometres an hour, launched into the air for 22 metres, landed on one corner.
After turning around 180 degrees.
After turning around 180 degrees, and it's fixable. If you look at the picture on the British Gantry thing, it looks like you could almost shove some wheels on it and drive it.
Yeah.
Which is impressive.
God, think of the holiday that driver's got out of that with whiplash.
Yeah. I mean, it's great that they actually came out and said the guy, the driver was a bit shaken, but that was it. But, you know, it's a €2 million car, roughly a 1-1.
Yeah.
And essentially it got trashed because of a €100 wheel speed sensor. And I know that ABS sensors can go funny because one of the cars I drove at the SMMT day on the handling circuit had a bit of a dicky ABS sensor just because it didn't like what it had been being asked to do by going around the track repeatedly. So I came back and said, you know, this happened. The PR guy went, no. It does that one. It does that and it does it here and it doesn't do it on the road because it's a bit odd and it's just not used to it. So, yeah, but it's great that they were so transparent. And that's really
nice. Yes, it's very refreshing. And well done to Koenigsegg, and I hope you get the car back on the road pretty quick.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Totally. Oh, it's... okay, this is the last of our bad news, isn't it? Almost.
It depends on your point of view.
Well, yes, it does. So...
the last of the FCA.
Yeah, last of the FCA. So, yes, last of the FCA stuff. Just do this very, very quickly. So, FCA came out... Open, honest, earlier on, here's what's happening. For the sales up to the end of 2013, trouble is now they have found an issue with the electrics of Cherokee and of Jeep Cherokee and Renegade models built between 2012 and 2014, and they're all up for a recall. In all honesty, It's a very small number from here in the UK. It's 1,418 UK cars. That's 29 Renegades, 1,389 Jeep Cherokees that have to go in. And it is because of what's been described as an insufficient crimp in a wire harness. A crimp in a wire harness sounds awfully painful. But yeah, it's there's basically a dicky wiring harness. It is a voluntary recall rather than a mandatory one, but again, they advise that owners go for it.
Yeah, it causes the car to stall if it's not. Could cause the car to stall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not a huge number. It's not a huge number there. It's not known when it's going to take place or how long it's going to take to do it. But if you're replacing a chunk of the wiring harness, it's not an hour's job, really, is it? Unless they do something impressive.
Not
so
really.
We'll see what happens there. Anyway, there is a recall out for them. So if you've got one, you might want to check with your local dealership.
That was nice and quick. Well done.
That was nice and quick. Thank you. I'm pleased.
Now let's look. Why don't you move on to something that's a bit more surprising, actually?
It's right. Well, the thing is, I'm surprised that this still happens. And actually, the August edition of the August print edition of Glasses Guide, the book of car values, which used to be that little secretive book that your dealer would go to and poke at and then turn around and show you a number much, much lower than you were expecting for your trade-in. Basically, the 925th edition for August 2016 will be the last ever Dead Tree edition. And they will be moving to the Glasses Guide app, which is both available both... I've seen the online version as well. I know that Rockium used the online version. Rockium Cars used the online version as well as the mobile versions as well. So, yeah, it is an end of the era there. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is a bit. I mean, it's always, you know, it's the second-hand dealers always propping up a cup of coffee or something like that. And, yeah, it's...
And just out of interest, just so that you know, they're saying that they've got an extensive archive of the 925 editions, but the first six issues are missing. So if anyone happens to find or see to see the issues from July to August 1933, then the folks at Glasses would be really interested to hear from you.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're not stopping some of the guides, though, are they?
No, I was just about to say that. Commercial vehicle, caravan and motorcycle guides are going to continue being published. I mean, they have said that they've been publishing the paperback version of the car guide for way longer than has been economically viable, just to let everyone transition over. So that's a shame.
Mm.
That's a shame, but these things happen.
Yep. Right. This week it was announced that the DVLA has lost £93 million after the paper tax disc was scrapped. So my first thought was, have you looked down the back of the couch?
Mm-hmm.
But my second thought was, are we sure? I always get a bit cynical when I see massive figures bandied around.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when people are talking about lost revenue, when they're not necessarily talking about they've lost actual, you know, there is this money is actually missing.
Yes.
So when you dig a bit deeper into it,
because the initial inference is that, well, that's a sudden drop because they no longer publish the tax discs, and the first thing you think is, well, obviously that's a lot of people who aren't taxing their cars as a result.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, but when you dig a little bit deeper, now, certainly there are people who aren't taxing, but there was people who weren't taxing before.
But it's easier to do it accidentally now.
Yes.
I say that as someone who bought a car, didn't completely understand the way that the new taxing system works, and it is essentially month to month, and that if you buy a car, the tax doesn't come with it. So I checked out when the tax ran to, thought that continued to be the case, and about a month later got a note through the door saying, do you know your vehicle's not actually taxed, Mr. Bradley? I was like, oh, goodness me. Tap, 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 tap. Done. Through the fantastic online service that the DVLA have these days.
Yes.
It's really good. Rather good.
They've got good website. They do. I am impressed with that. So obviously people then see these headline figures and go, disgusting. We should go back to paper.
Disgustingly disgusted.
Yes. Thank you for giving me something to be outraged about. Mm-hmm. So people were outraged. But then when you dig a little bit deeper, then some of the organisations who are shouting outraged a lot then go, well, it could be that there's more cars that are tax exempt. But that doesn't really translate into a nice headline, so we're going to continue to be outraged. Change is bad. So, yes, there are people who accidentally or on purpose are not taxing their cars, and it is easier to do so now there isn't a disc in the corner of your windscreen.
Mm-hmm.
However, the number of cars that are eligible to reduced tax rates and to no tax rates that are on the roads has increased. So if you're just looking at, if you are only looking at this as purely number of cars on the road to income, then yes, there will be a difference.
Yes, absolutely.
So please, can we do some more research and find out?
Yes. Kindly.
Yes.
Cool. So that brings us, you'll be pleased to hear, up to that point in the show when I politely request your feedback via whichever means works for you, and whichever way that your podcast tool and app of choice works. Ideally, of course, then what you would do for us is you would be able to leave a review on the largest podcast platform of the lot, which is the egregious iTunes. And we understand the reluctance to do that because, goodness, they don't make it easy, do they? But yes, please, this is the point where I politely remind you to leave a star rating, preferably leave a one or two line of review. That'd be absolutely genius.
They could join their fellow listeners, of which
could join.
Two more, since we last mentioned that we'd had a review,
Ooh.
Two more reviews and ratings have been left on said iTunes, mm-hmm. which we're very grateful
for. Two doesn't sound like much, but in actual fact, even compared to incredibly huge podcasts, that's actually quite good.
Yes.
It really is. And the other thing is, of course, that you're not just doing it out of the goodness of your heart right at the moment, but you're doing it because up until the end of the month, you have the chance to win one of two Formula E goodie bags. Whee! Containing caps, books, and Motion Club passes from the London Formula E weekend, as well as foldy up compact and useful brollies. There's a spare program. In one of them, there is a toy Qualcomm Formula E car with a Google Cardboard style virtual reality headset to let you experience the view from the driver's seat of a Qualcomm Formula E car. What more could you possibly ask for?
It's your last chance.
It is your last chance, guys.
The winners will be announced on the next show.
I actually missed the show when I said which one they'd be announced on, so it's actually the one after next I said I'd announce them on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I made a mistake. Whenever I said it out loud, I skipped a week. So we should really hold with what it says two podcasts ago.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. That's no problem.
I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up, actually, because I was trying not.
Well, you've got till, and I'm turning around to look at a calendar now.
Got till the 7th, I think. The 9th.
Okay, so we're going to go into August, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So actually, it's a bit past the end of the month, and that's fine. But you get extra bonus points against your name for doing it before the end of the month. So please, if you can, leave a review on iTunes. If you leave a review anywhere else, and we would love you to leave a review anywhere else. In fact, you could even leave the same review in many, many different platforms. That would be super. We'd really like that. You'd be in with a good chance on the goodie bags then. As long as you tell us what those other platforms are. Okay, we're keeping an eye on iTunes. We're keeping an eye on a couple of other places too. But if you leave stuff outside iTunes, if you could let us know via @motoringpodcast on Twitter or via email to info@motoringpodcast.com, that would be genius. And then we can go off and we can look at those. So a couple of weeks' time, we will reveal who have won the goodie bags, and then we will do our level best to get in touch. Some of you have rather obscure names on iTunes.
Yes, I think if we announce the winner, people are going to have to then get in touch with us.
Yes, get in touch with us, I'm afraid, because we can't always tie Twitter names to usernames.
Some people have been cunning.
Yes. We will, of course, be taking into account existing reviews, so people who had reviewed before the month, because they are even lovelier because they didn't need bribed. And I think that will do for that section just at the minute. So please, guys, don't forget, it's coming up to the end of the time when you can win the goodie bags. Basically, they are in my way and I want them out of my sitting room and into yours.
That's a way of selling hands. It. Well done.
No, well, they are, because I can't even use this. The stuff's really cool. I really like the stuff that's in them. But I can't touch them or use them, and I'm trying to keep everything as pristine as it possibly can be. And it's these really cool little gym bags and stuff. They'll be perfect for your kids' packed lunches and things. Really good. Or for a pair of shoes if you're cycling or whatever. They're really good wee bags in themselves. So it's just that they're cluttering up my sitting room.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a major issue in my sitting room.
Yes.
That sounds terrible. My mum listens. She'll think that my sitting room is like some kind of weird tramps.
Well, it's a mess. I've been there. It is a drudge.
You're so
dreadful mess.
Stop it.
No, it's spotless, to be fair. How can I say anything? I have three children. I'm constantly in a mess. Right,
anyway,
let's move on.
Let's talk on to this one. So, yeah, you go. This is almost positive.
No, it is. It was. This is a good thing because it's not having to pop anymore. But there was a security conference held in Sheffield the other week called SteelCon, and it was SteelCon 2016. And this time there was a couple of chats about hacking cars. Mm-hmm. Now, the first one that I'm going to have a link in the show notes to is by a chap called Chris Ratcliffe, who people on Twitter will probably know because he is quite active in the motoring corner of Twitter. Very nice chap who I've been chatting to this week since I found these and actually retweeted them and said go watch this. But his introduction to connected cars, vulnerabilities, how to hack them for fun, what can be done for profit, but then in a white hat. From a white hat perspective and from a good hacking perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But he also talked, which I did know, but I've sort of glossed over in my mind because it's older tech. But the, is it CAN?
CANBUS.
The CANBUS.
The OBD2.
And yeah, which is that little socket that when you get a warning light or a code comes up on your dashboard on anything remotely modern, then the guy plugs in your garage and goes, "Oh right, we need to change your alternator," or something like that.
Sorry, don't normal people have their own readers for these things?
No, Alan, normal people don't have their own readers.
Normal people don't have cars that throw codes every 10 minutes. Yeah.
No. So this is it's a 45-minute talk. Now that sounds a bit chunky, but it's actually very, very good. And I encourage you to go and watch that one because when he's talking about the CAM
OBD port,
yeah, the OBD port and that whole system, it scared me. Because it was very clear how easy it is to get in and fiddle with the systems of the car that isn't a particularly, in inverted commas, air quotes, and I will beat myself for doing this later, but advanced or technologically advanced car, as long as it's got this port, you can go in and you can adjust things. You can fiddle around with all sorts of settings and stuff.
That should be all new cars since 1996 have been required to have that.
Yeah, I think it was first... he mentions it was first introduced in the 80s and then became legislation.
That was OBD and then OBD2 is the later one.
Yeah. So, I would thoroughly encourage you to go and watch it. And so then you can get a better understanding of the pitfalls and the vulnerabilities and the sort of things that manufacturers need to be considering, and you as a consumer can be better prepared and more knowledgeable and ask the questions. Particularly, he does talk about some I think they're PR stunts would be really what they're called, but he says that's one of the hardest aspects for security in connected cars at the moment is the PR department saying, ooh, wouldn't it be good if...
Yes, absolutely.
Not thinking...
this marketing, could... marketing-tastic.
Yes. So we just talked about it. So it's very good. And the second video is by a chap called Scott Helm, and he talks about his work on hacking a Nissan Leaf. Now, I haven't watched this one all the way through, he is one of the two researchers that did the hacking of the Leaf, and he's explaining that through. So, again, that'll be an interesting one to watch. Talking of Scott Helm, though, you may have seen this on Twitter Tuesday, but Ecotricity have announced how they've patched up their recharge app because...
Is that the one that you questioned the security of and I poo-pooed you the other week?
Yes, but this was...
it is, isn't it?
This was purely by coincidence because I poo-poo anything.
It had to happen at some point.
And, you know, there we go. Proof positive. There's my confirmation bias forevermore. I am always right. Even if we don't know it, there's going to be a weakness in there. I know that. But Scott Helm pointed it out. And Ecotricity, to their credit, have moved quickly and they have done an update which fixes the vulnerability that was on that app. There is a link in the show notes so that if you're interested, we'll explain further of what the problem was and what's been done to fix it. So, so yes.
Yeah, that was a goodie.
Right. Well, talking of connected cars.
Yeah.
In the US yesterday, the automotive industry, or Auto IASAC, which is ISAC.
I'm sorry. It's not a night for being grown up. Yes.
Yes.
ISAC.
The automotive industry's information sharing group.
Yes.
Which basically is concerned with cybersecurity. They've released some guidelines. These guidelines are meant to address the frequent issues or the frequent questions that come up, including vulnerability disclosure and supply chain management.
Mm-hmm.
Other really sexy stuff like that. But it's vital. It is vital. Security chain management supply chain management, is a massive issue. And you heard us, or heard me, get quite ranty about disclosure and allowing
disclosures. I think even I got slightly ranty about that kind of stuff as well recently. From the other end, where suppliers could just hand over stuff and then not really be responsible anymore.
Yeah. I will again have a link to this. It's all quite high level stuff and quite general terms on basically everybody needs to do the right thing.
It is also general guidance for any sort of network.
Yeah,
I mean development and design. So you know,
one of the things they're really promoting is which is what you highlighted as a particularly good practice of Tesla, which was over the air updating.
Mm-hmm.
But some manufacturers prefer to get people in and then plug in the car and do it that way. So it's manufacturers need to confirm exactly what the way that they will do updates.
Yeah, because both are valid arguments for both. But the article from thehill.com is very interesting.
And they also talked to a representative from IM, the Cavalry, which is an organisation that has been getting more and more vocal about best practices for security. And they have a five-point advice or standards they wish all auto manufacturers to hit. They've said it's a good start. It goes further than other major industries, but they need it to do more.
Yeah,
as is always the way with these things. But it's the first step, and hopefully they will move quickly now.
It's good that stuff's in writing. It is done by an alliance of automakers, so that's pretty good stuff, and hopefully that will spread across the Atlantic and this kind of direction. It's pretty clear stuff. It's worth a read if you're interested in that kind of thing. You're interested in any form of network security, then that is interesting stuff to me anyway, but maybe that's just me. So there's been a little bit of a spate recently of announcements about new hypercars and supercars and all sorts of stuff. And we're going to speak about McLaren in just a minute or two. But before that, a company that's never really built super ultra hypercars, but have built very exclusive cars, is trying to relaunch itself. And that is, of course, Bristol. And they have, there are spy shots out there, I think is the best way of putting it, of the, I'm having a mental blank as its name now, of the new Bristol anyway. And it is challenging. The back is interesting. The back is a little bit sort of 1950s. It's a little bit finned. It's a little bit,
fins.
Well, they possibly haven't yet. It's a bit low volume.
It's got a license plate.
It'd be low volume anyway.
The picture we're looking at has got a license plate.
I know.
How have they got permission?
Low volume. It's fine because it's not in the front of the car. You're unlikely to maim a pedestrian with those fins, which are reminiscent of the BAT Alfa Romeos over the years from there. And it's kind of cool. It's a little bit sort of, there's a bit of Cadillac in there, there's a bit of Alfa in there at the back, and it's kind of fun. The front is more challenging, and it's kind of based on let me get my numbers right. I think it's the 403 and the 404 around the grille, which is kind of cool. But the trouble is they've put sort of large classic-style headlamps, but then tiny projectors inside, so that it looks like it's eyes like pee holes and snow, basically. It has a look of shock. And the other problem it has is that the front wing, as it comes over the top of the wheel, there's an awful lot of body above that front wheel, between the top of the wing and the top of the wheel
arch. One of the problems I have is the wheels are absolutely massive.
You see, I actually think the wheels look tiny and dwarfed. But I think there's a combination of, there's a lot of wheel, but there's practically no tyre. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why it looks so imbalanced there. They look like OZ Ultra Ligaris, which are wheel I'd normally like, but they look a bit funny on there. It's there. I'm sure there'll be a link in the show notes to the tweet by Only9Build showing the pictures. I think that it is very much going to divide opinion. I hope it, my plan really is hopefully it will raise some funds to sort of try and revitalize and reinitiate the Bristol brand, because they've made some fabulous cars over the year. So yeah, the Fighter was really quite something, and then there's some of the other ones before the Blenheim and the Beaufort and some of these other Bristols of relatively the last 30 years or so. Great cars, and let's have them back as GTs, not as sort of steroidal slippers. I think would be great to see. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that because it was unusual.
Yes, really. That's the polite way of putting it.
Yeah, so let's talk a bit more about McLaren. They've released their financial results and their business plans for the next few years. And Andrew, you've got some opinions on that.
I do. There's a link in the show notes to their actual release discussing it. Now, there's a couple of things that immediately leap to mind for me. In there's lots of figures and numbers and dates and stuff like that, but I'm just going to cherry pick a few. I like the fact that they are throwing so much of their money into R&D. They are, according to them, industry leading in the amount that they are putting. I think this must be percentage wise, yeah, into their products. So the other thing that leaps to mind is they have a new shareholder who put in 49 million quid.
Mm-hmm. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, which possibly helped with their profit.
Yeah.
And it's not a massive profit, but again, it's a profit. I think it's the third year running they've been in profit.
It is, yeah.
So that's good news that they're in profit.
Mm-hmm. So that's the third year in profit, and they've only been building road cars for 5 years. Since the first 12C left the production center.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive. That, you know, from mostly startup-ish through is pretty good going anyway.
Absolutely. And they've increased numbers being sold. So they think they're going to sell more than 3,000 in 2016.
Yeah.
Which is great for a niche, bespoke and let's not forget expensive car.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, depending on which one you buy, I mean, none of them start cheap.
Nah.
So that's good. But the thing that really grabbed me and potentially made me a little bit worried was the Track 22, which is their business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, is the number of new vehicles by 2022.
Right.
And they want 15 all-new cars or derivatives by 2022.
Right. But mate, by then they will have... They seem to have a very, 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 very short life cycle on their vehicles. But they have a much longer life cycle on the platform that underpins them. So, to be honest, given they'll come out with a vehicle, they'll make 100 or 200 of them, and that'll be it. And then they'll move on to a different, slightly different derivative. And remember, a new vehicle in their
yeah, parlance, but 15 in total implies a new model in the range. Because they've got three car range, new cars or derivatives. Yeah, is it a three car range at the moment?
It's more than that. You've got to remember that it says all new cars or derivatives.
No, so I know it says derivatives.
But that'll mean a hard top is one.
Yeah,
convertible is another.
Totally
one way
that.
With an opening rear deck is going to be a third one, like the LTs and stuff.
They've got three trim levels. I'm sure you know the Sports Series, the Super Series, and the Ultimate Series.
Yes.
I'm
glad you could remember those.
No, I mean I just scrolled back up.
I was impressed for a second there.
No, it's me. Come on.
So I was impressed.
But I still believe they have to have another model in there as well to hit those figures, even, you know, because 6 years.
Quite possibly. I'm not going to die.
5.5 years.
Yeah. Well, maybe. But that's at least... It sounds impressive. It sounds like a really high number. But I think that if they were to work it through and you were to kind of see it as a grid, then I don't think it would be as shocking as it sounds.
Ding.
No, down, yes.
Because they also talk about they've got sales volumes of 1,600 for 2015, and they want to triple that number by 2020. Now, we've discussed this with Tesla, and we have mentioned McLaren in this.
Wouldn't a Porsche Boxster fighter just give them that volume and a new range?
Yeah, but they are not geared up for volume. They're going to have to make some compromises. If they do volume, they have to make some compromises.
Are they not expanding the MPC, the production centre, again? I thought they were.
Well, they're going to... Because moving from... You know, this is what we've discussed before, but moving from a small section of products and the variety of the derivatives to a wider range and increased volume adds complexity that isn't, you know, exponential.
Yeah, if they're able to try and base stuff on a similar platform to what they've already got, then that should lessen some of that. Now, growth is the hardest thing that a business can do because it requires so much change. Because it also can involve a change of mindset, and that's really where it gets tricky. And I see that there was another news story recently that involved a company that I've worked with in the past, and they're looking to, you know, and as part of that story, they're looking to, excuse us, they're looking to, dog is attacking someone next door, and they're looking to double their number of employees. And I'm like, whoa, they're having enough growing pains as it is without having to add that on.
Yeah.
So, yes, you're right. It will involve growth. I mean, they've had a significant growth so far, but I feel that McLaren is already run like a grown-up company and not like a tiny little startup. Mm. So I feel that they should be better able to accommodate and use that growth.
Okay.
I almost used the word leverage somewhere in there as well. I understand.
To tick all the boxes.
But basically, I understand what you're saying. I understand why you're saying it. I don't think you're wrong. I actually even think you're right. But I feel that McLaren should be grown up enough to be able to do that.
I hope so.
Yeah, just
when I start seeing vast numbers of models in short spaces of time, it takes me back to that Lotus. Makes me so worried that, you know, somebody's, you know, shared his drink or something.
Kool-Aid.
Yes. And
his was crazy. His was ridiculous, front-engined and mid-engined and all sorts of stuff all together and... His was a special kind of crazy.
Yes, he was.
But let's
move on.
Yes, because a leading UK UK magazine
that we link to a lot,
what a car, had a full front page splash in their Dead Tree edition, saying that they had heard and spoken to a number of sources and put together a bunch of rumours to say that McLaren were considering a new Hyper GT car. So not an all-out Ultimate Series and McLaren P1 race car, but something that was more of like the Ultimate GT car.
Would that be going up against that crazy Red Bull Aston Martin thingy, or is that in a rung below? Because I'm getting confused
about our
supercars, hypercars, hyper-hypercars, super-hypercar, hyper-supercar. There's too many levels now for me.
So this one here is listed as a Hyper GT. So in my mind, and this is my mind, okay, this is not anything official or written down, I see this as more like a Chiron or a Veyron competitor, where...
That Aston Martin thingy was the rung above.
The Aston Martin is more like the P1 has been, which is, it's not about the luxury and the necessarily the posing on the Riviera in the south of France and or
Regent Street
or Kensington High Street. it's about actually, you know, the full track type thing, a bit like the Aston Vulcan style thing. The Vulcan, I feel, fits into that kind of... It doesn't fit into that. It fits into the absolute nutter is essentially a track car. Well, it is a track car, Vulcan. Type thing, which is where the Aston Red Bull fits as well.
Okay.
So nutty, so much money, it doesn't really matter anymore. Can just hire the Yas Marina circuit in Bahrain for the weekend to just play with your mates and your special cars, for want of a better term, on the top. I was running out of them. If I say an Uber car, it sounds like it's a
taxi.
It's a black Prius, so we can't use that anymore. And I think that what Autocar were talking about was a Hyper GT. Now, we didn't talk about that last week because we thought, oh, it's kind of rumor. And one of the things we don't talk about is we try not to talk about too much is rumor.
That is one of our core
principles.
Yes, those.
Yes,
we don't want to just repeat rumor, and we want to wait until either it's fact or it goes away, and then we don't have to mention it.
So why are we talking about this? Well, we're talking about this because then what happened was that then the chief executive of McLaren had an interview with Car and Driver magazine, the American magazine, to which I also happen to subscribe, and he basically said that, well, we're not building a new F1, and we're not doing this, we're not doing the next thing, and so then Jalopnik hopped on it and said, well, of course this is rubbish, you know, Autocar is cool, but they're wrong. But what was most interesting, and Jim Holder, the editor of Autocar, who had been very excited, I think, about this front page. I mean, after we'd all been through and said, is it a new small Jag? And made all the other jokes, which he took in very good humour, actually. I guess closest, because I said it was a Mini, which at least had an M at the start. So it wasn't,
what we're going
wasn't
on, the
a
alphabet.
New small Land Rover or a new small Discovery or anything like that. What was that?
So you're going on the alphabet. That's how you won that one. No.
Oh, I so won that, yeah.
Oh dear.
So what was interesting was that there was this contradiction, and whenever you read the words, actually, what happens is that yes, the chief executive of McLaren, McLaren CEO Mike Fluitt, he said that they weren't doing a number of things. He was very clear that they weren't doing a number of things. The thing is, the things he said they weren't doing weren't what Autocar was saying
they would do.
So this is interesting because actually there's a whole thing about him refuting things which weren't actually what was originally being claimed. And it's all got very, very interesting, actually, as a result of that. And that made the whole story far more interesting than rumours about it.
Yes, we got to see people using language quite elegantly.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way that made people think they're denying it when they weren't denying the specific statement that Autocar had made.
Yeah.
That was never denied outright. Mm-hmm. They talked and used words and structured the sentences in a very clever way that implied, or didn't even imply, but just gave the general impression to people, if you didn't pay attention to it, that what Autocar said was nonsense. So it was...
Autocar's article, some people said, oh, this is rubbish, it's all speculation. And there's a lot there, there's a lot of specifics in there, quite a few specifics in there, but there are some other bits where there is some conjecture. And the thing is that actually they were quite clear that was an unclear thing. So they were quite good. There was a lot of use of the word could. There was a lot of talk about the aims of it. They were saying, well, there's a possibility that it might be have three seats with a central front seat and these kind of things. And they were very clear saying it's a possibility. And they put out some renders, which you could believe I think that I don't think quite right around the front, but you the believable renders. And it tries to compare it back to some of their existing range. So it's worth reading all of them just to compare the language and to see what's actually been, what people have said isn't happening, what they haven't said isn't happening, compared to initials. Very, very interesting. And actually did make that story something we were going to talk about rather than just saying there's a rumor of a new, very, very fast car. Let's all get excited about it.
Yes.
No, I thought it was worth looking at.
Yep.
But speaking of new cars, full news!
Excellent. I'm looking forward to this full review.
Are you looking forward to this full review? So on Sunday morning on my way to Redditch to Great Escape, I was overtaken by a prototype with the... It had the mild wind noise package. So it wasn't heavily disguised at all. It was quite lightly disguised. But whilst I could make out the forms... and things, then the actual details were kind of covered up by the camo wrap.
So as you weren't in the car and you saw that it was a test vehicle or prototype, whatever the correct terminology is, how did it ride for you?
Well, it rode fantastically well, and I feel that they must have those steering. The steering must be almost finished, and I feel there's about 10,000 words I could write on this. In all honesty, it was the new discovery. It was a late model prototype. To be honest, it looked like it was just fine on the motorway. But I actually got a bit of a look at its looks, because I was sitting quite happily, sat on the cruise control at the speed limit, and it sort of cruised gently up behind me. So I had some time to admire it on the quiet Sunday morning motorways as it came up in the rearview mirror, and as it went past, and then it basically matched my speed. I didn't do anything to try and chase or anything ridiculously silly like that. And it matched my speed. So I had some time to look at the front and to look at the back. And I've got to say that given that it's the replacement for the existing Discovery, which is a very distinctive vehicle, you know, it has that squareness to it, that solidity to it. It has those very particular looks which say, well, you know, I'm all about being a workhorse. I'm not interested in being fashionable. I'm not interested in many things. I'm here to do something you can depend on. And despite the fact it's a Land Rover, it does give that vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. I quite like the latest version because I think it's not great looking. It definitely gives across I have a purpose. My purpose is to carry people around in relative comfort. I am large. You will notice me. But I am not trying to be a Range Rover. I am not trying to be an Evoque. I am purely what I am.
So in this day and age, the thing about it is a distinctive vehicle. You Yes. cannot get it mixed up with anything else.
But there's not much else out there that has big sides like that.
Yeah. The new one doesn't have those big sides. The new one is like an XC90. Imagine you got a bar of soap, right? And you chiseled it finely into the shape of a Volvo XC90, which is a fantastically good-looking vehicle. Okay, and then you use that bar of soap for a week or two. Well, that's what it looks like. It is like a rounded-off, slanderfied version of the Range Rover Sport, which has had the interesting bits removed, and then the sort of stretched the back and sort of scaled up a little bit. And it's just blobby. Now, I was clear to point out, hopefully, at the start, that the detailing was slightly obscured on this. But it just looked dull. There's no step in the roof that we're used to with Discoveries. That has been a feature that, you know, the step in the roof and the Alpine windows and the resulting leaks around those Alpine windows has been a Discovery feature since they were new. Okay, and it's cool. I've always thought it was cool. I know I make fun of Land Rovers, but actually, I really, really like them, and I love that they exist, and I love looking at them. I just don't know I'd want to own them. And I think they're important. So we've got that. We've got that. That distinctiveness has gone. Some of the the heritage in the shape has gone, and it's left something which just looks like a bloated Discovery Sport. It's as if they've gone to the Mercedes School of Design and said, but with a Brummie accent, we have designed a car, now we will scale it by 10% and shrink it by 10%, and there we will have a model range.
Yeah, that's...
And the trouble is, it's gone to that, and I'm so disappointed. It's not that I don't like it. It's that I'm disappointed in it, and that's far worse.
Yeah, it's like they've not really tried with the Land Rover brand. You can see they've put a lot of effort into the Range Rover brand.
Which is great. Yes, really looks good. I just worry. The thing is that there's no Defender in the Land Rover range anymore. Okay, so the commercial vehicle and all that world seems to have ceased. Now, there was some stuff on Twitter this evening that we haven't incorporated into the show about history of brands and how key models seem to have been kind of written out. In certainly one brand's case. And I feel that this is what's possibly happening with Land Rover, and I worry that the Land Rover design team are far more Range Rover people and small, cuddly SUV people than they are Land Rover people, Discovery and Defender people, and that makes me really worried about Land Rover. It really does, and it sounds so silly, and I had some time sitting in the car thinking about it. And I actually managed to work myself into being quite upset by this on my way to Reddit on Sunday morning, because I thought, what a waste! It's just lost so much that
they need to make a clear identity of the Land Rover brand. I totally agree with you that the way it's gone lately, that it's just like, oh yeah, it's Land Rover.
I think they're stopping having a Land Rover brand. They're having a Discovery brand now instead.
Well, yeah, sorry, it's the Discovery. It's the Discovery.
And I don't, yeah.
And that, it's easy to get excited if you're marketing or if you're designing, or, you know, you're in that side of things to do with the Range Rover brand, because it's the sexier one at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's the one that you can throw in stars. You know, it's the one that's seen on James Corden's karaoke thing or whatever, carpool thing. You know, it's a very recognisable brand. Like I say, it's the sexy one to work on. Mm-hmm. And the Discovery brand, they haven't been really clear what that is. Because the price, you know, you look at the price points, it's not like that's the cheap option.
No, not at all. It's never been the cheap option.
So you can't call them workhorses.
But that doesn't mean you can't make them distinctive.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they're more practical.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd seen earlier in the week, I'd seen even somebody describing it as, yeah, the reason they bought one because it looked a bit like a whaley boot and they could treat it like that and use it for towing stuff all around the world, you know, all up and down the country. And you see a lot of Discoveries towing big trailers with big heavy work stuff in, and I could not imagine that as a vehicle. I couldn't imagine the new Discovery in silver or white with high-vis chevrons on the back and orange beacons on the roof.
No.
Parked in at the side in motorway roadworks.
No, not at all. You'll see a pickup before that then. Now,
I would hope so.
That's what will happen, is the manufacturers of pickups, because they've become more refined, that's what happens with those with a box over the back.
Yeah, it's usually D-Max do that a lot.
Yeah, but you can see, you could see the VW Amarok or the new, the latest version of the Ranger, the Ford Ranger.
Yeah.
Absolutely fulfilling that role, and Land Rover miss out.
Yeah, which is a shame. That's a pity. So yes, we weren't at the end of the bad news, as I said earlier on. Yes, I'd forgotten about that. So yeah, there
it's
we go.
It's more sad than bad.
It is sad, yes, it is the sad news. And hopefully I'll be proven wrong. So please, go out there, prove me wrong. I'd really like that to be the case.
Yeah.
Andrew, list of the week.
list of
hunt around for list of the week because we seem to be out of lists. It seems to be past award time. Or at least if we could find lists, we couldn't actually find the entire list.
No, that was hard.
Yes. So, we're actually on backup list.
Well, this is a new list, award for 2016, which is the Co-op Safe Use Car 2016. Now, I actually think that's quite an interesting award, all joking aside that it's it's the second choice because we couldn't find the full of the first. But I actually do think this is an interesting one because so many people do buy their cars secondhand. And what this was based on was that, what the criteria was that the car had to have a 5-star Euro NCAP rating and be available to buy for £15,000 or less.
Yes.
They then evaluated the crashworthiness, including the ratings for adult, child and pedestrian protection and the availability of automatic emergency braking. Now, I will run through the list and then, Alan, you can reveal the winner.
Oh, I don't know that I can... hold myself. On you go, then.
Richard Gooding's deafened now you've done that.
I know. Serves him right, because he did exactly the same when he was on last. He
okay,
can complain no more.
Right, so I'll run through the list. So the models that were chosen to that fit the criteria were the Mazda CX-5 from 2012, the Honda Civic from 2012, the Mercedes A-Class from 2012, the Mazda 3 from 2013, the Volvo V40 from 2012, the Vauxhall Astra from 2015, the Peugeot 308 from 2013, the Nissan Qashqai from 2014, the Volkswagen Golf from 2012, and the Volvo V40 brackets with safety pack close brackets 2012. You've got to be exact.
I know you do. It's important. Precision is important in these kind of things. And the winner for that kind of precision is the Volvo V40 with safety pack from 2012.
And there's actually quite an impressive amount of pack of equipment in that pack.
Of equipment. Yes, there is. So what's the difference? First of all, you go, well, what's the difference between safety pack and not safety pack? Well, safety pack includes road sign recognition, so it identifies the speed limit, shows on the dashboard, adaptive cruise control, adaptive lane support, blind spot warning, driver monitoring system to alert if the motorist is showing signs of fatigue, automatic braking, and active high beam, which are a lot of those are things that I would spec on cars anyway. I think it's fantastic they come in a safety pack like that, which is absolutely genius. Euro NCAP scores 98% for adults, 75% for kids, 88% for pedestrians, it's really good. Now, I believe there's a story that says nobody in the UK has actually been killed inside a Volvo V40 or an XC90 since they were launched.
That's amazing.
Current generations. Now, that's not in this, but I saw that independently. I'm not quite sure how correct it is, but that's impressive, and that's what they're aiming for. There's also a link on the page that Andrew will no doubt link to, which runs through all the details of this. Which is a link that shows that you can go and you can look up your own car, and actually it takes you to the page on the Euro NCAP website, which lets you choose your car and then see just what its ratings are.
Ding, two.
Oh, two tonight. See just what its ratings are. So that might be useful if you are looking at buying and you are a used car and you're interested in the and you're very interested in the safety aspect, then you can go there.
Good.
Yeah, well done, Volvo. Nice one from the co-op. Well done, folks.
Yeah, that's an award I approve of.
Yes, I like that one.
Yeah.
So you've got a quick story to finish us off.
Right, to round out. A friend of the show at Major Gav has finally, some may say, got on to his AX GT, which has been, unfortunately, due to time, money, space, been languishing at his home, but he's now started #ProjectAX. And the link in the show note will show the picture of the rear bumper has been removed, which looks not too bad around that. And then you look a bit further forward to the rear wheel arches, and that doesn't look so good.
No, it's a little bit on the crinkly side.
Yeah, the needs attention side.
Mm-hmm.
But this is great that there's another project for us and this podcast to follow. And just through a blind spot, but Alan pointed out it's another Citroen.
It's another small Citroen. So the two projects that we're keeping an eye on and trying to keep you up to date with are two small Citroens. So hopefully we'll find someone else with another project which doesn't involve compact French vehicles.
Well, no, well, it wasn't going to be a Citroen, but I was going to maybe suggest Carl Witter's 106.
Yeah, you see, that was the next one that I thought of, which was a small French vehicle.
So if anybody's got a project car that isn't small or
isn't French
do please get in touch. If it's, then we'll see if it's interesting and we will follow progress, because we do like the fact that people are trying to save interesting cars. That's all the criteria needs to be. It needs to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. And of course, for more on that kind of stuff, more of any major gas stuff, then petrolblog.com is fantastic. If you're a Facebooky person, you can follow it on there as well as Twitter. So yeah, always good to follow what Gav is up to, because it's normally interesting and tongue in cheek and everything else, which is good.
Yes. Yep.
Great stuff. I think that just about rounds us up for this week, doesn't it?
It does. Only an hour and a half into the show or something like that.
Gee, have we done that again?
Yes, we've done it again. When we said we'd be quick.
Well, we tried.
I think we talked a bit about McLaren, quite a bit.
We did. We did. Yes.
It's all right. Anyway, no one will notice.
Nobody will notice. Yes, they'll all be asleep. But anyway, let's hurry up and round it out then. So don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Loads of Instagram stuff coming from Sunday, by the way, now that Photos has finally decided to synchronize across devices. So loads of stuff coming from there, some other bits and pieces. You can follow us on Facebook, please do. There's the occasional bits and pieces and shares appear there as well. And of course, you can get in touch with us through the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, which is the hub of all of our activities. As ever, as I've already said, don't forget to leave a review and rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter and could win you one of two FIA Formula E goodie bags. Andrew.
Don't sound so depressed.
Getting in touch with you. That's not depression, that's relief.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. If people would like to get in touch with me personally, the best way would be via Twitter, where I can be found under @crackwindscreen. And if, heaven forfend, they want to get in touch with you personally, Alan.
Again, Twitter's the best, @AJPBradley. So, yeah, you'll find me there whenever I'm not, you know, having to do work and stuff, really. So until I'm back next week, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.